Episode 83.
The need for a software update, not need for a software, the ability to do an update, because software always has some bugs. We'll always need a next version of release, just like we are used to any electronics that we have today, whether it's PC or mobile phone. That is a must have.
Welcome to Remarkable Results Radio's audio replay of this face-to-face video roundtable.
Hello, aftermarketers. Carm Capriato here with the audio-only version of the face-to-face video podcast brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program at their all-new website, fmmotorparts.com. To say you're in for another deep and powerful discussion about the connected car is an understatement. Welcome to Part 2, Behind the Scenes of the Connected Car. Now, Part 1 in this series is in Episode 78 and is a can't-miss episode. This episode, Part 2, really does take it up a notch, but in a different direction. This is a sequel, but really in a different sense. The impetus for this episode came from the post-reactions to 2016's Consumer Electronics Show. Three of our panelists attended and came away with their views. Since many car companies were on display at the Consumer Electronics Show, it was important to get our panel's post-CES interpretations. So why listen? As an aftermarket professional, it's important to be in on the discussion on the future of technology, security, operating systems, and connectivity that will shape automotive repair today and as the future unfolds. Listen for discussions on gesture-based technology, the future of the OBD2 port, security, OTA updates, that stands for over the air, hacking, how blockchain may figure into efficacy of ownership, and where the smartphone figures in for connectivity. Listen for the talk about GM's $500 million investment in Lyft and how the new Bolt may become a key component of car sharing in something called vehicle persona, because in New York City, it takes 20% of your drive time to find a parking spot. Now, all of these topics and more are discussed in a very eye-opening episode where concepts, ideas, and possibilities are explored, and that will make you sit up and pay attention to the impact technology will have on the decisions you will need to make now and in the future. See the show notes on detailed guest bios. Roger Lanto, Associate Director, Global Automotive Practice, Strategy Analytics, also heard in his own episode 40, and he'll become the moderator of the show. Also, David Miller, Chief Security Officer of Covisint, Mahbubul Alam, CTO and CMO of Movimento Group, and John Ellis, Founder and Managing Director of Ellis & Associates. Hey, buckle up. Enjoy. Here we go. I welcome you to round two, behind the scenes of the Connected Car, part two. And we have our esteemed panel back again today, and we'll have John Ellis join us in a minute. I'd like to introduce everyone to Roger Lanto, and Roger's also going to be the co-host. He did an incredible job. In fact, Hollywood called me last week and wanted you badly for one of those Fox TV shows or something. Roger Lanto, Associate Director, Global Automotive Practice at Strategy Analytics, and it's a global research and consulting firm that provides insights and strategic business solutions to companies operating at the convergence of information communications and entertainment technologies. Say hi, Roger.
Hello, good morning.
Roger was with me in episode 40, and it was a great episode at remarkableresults.biz. Dave Miller, say hi.
Hi.
Dave's the Chief Security Officer at Covisint. Dave directs the identity management offering at Covisint, which currently secures access for automotive, healthcare, energy, and government customers. Dave Miller has been with Covisint since its inception, architecting its federation solutions and implementing the first true identity network for the auto industry. Dave has more than 20 years' experience in the information technology and automotive industries, and prior to Covisint, he served as Director of Operations for GM Trade Exchange, managing the implementation and architecture of GM's automotive exchange. Mahbubul Alam.
Hi there.
CTO and now the CMO of Movimento Group. Mahbubul joined Movimento as CTO in 2015 and is responsible for aligning automotive and information technology with corporate strategy. To enable Movimento to better lead the automotive industry's transition to software-defined vehicles. A 17-year industry veteran, Mahbubul works with Movimento customers to maximize the potential of secure OTA, over the air. Our industry is just filled with acronyms, isn't it? OTA updates and enables new connected services for the vehicles. He had this great video from the CES show, and I made sure I put that on the website on episode 78. And I learned so much about that. Previously, Mabubul led Cisco Systems Strategy in IoT and M2M, where he pioneered and developed this business from the ground up. He also helped initiate the company's smart connected vehicle roadmap. Before joining Cisco, Mabubul held technical leader positions at Siemens and worked as a technical advisor to the Dutch government. And John Ellis, he'll be here. I know it. Let's introduce John so that when he does show up, you know what John's all about. In a few words, John's a technologist, founder, board member, entrepreneur, and software developer. John Ellis is a seasoned executive with over 25 years of experience in telecommunications, automotive, connected devices, ecosystems, embedded products, open source, and product management in global multicultural settings. Wow. Founder and principal of management consulting practice Ellis & Associates, where their reach is to provide focuses on the world where automotive, consumer connectivity, and software all intersect. Mr. Ellis is also a university adjunct professor delivering customized training and international business, sales, marketing, and finance instruction. He's an advisory board member of the Connected Car Expo at the Los Angeles Car Show. Part two, welcome behind the scenes of the Connected Car. Thrilled to have you all back again as my panel and a wonderful participation from my audience here. And of course, we'll record this and put it out on the website. And after part one, most of the panel was heading out to the 2016 CES Consumer Electronics Show. And with most car manufacturers represented or involved in presentations, we felt a lot that that this esteemed panel could and would learn from their participation at CES. So as Roger Lanto leads the panel, we'll take an excellent discussion from episode 78 and take it up a notch, considering any applicable automotive announcements and developments at 2016 CES that may encompass security, software updates, smartphone connections, safety. It may have been discussed, spoken, released, understood, assimilated, digest, compiled. You get the picture. And if there's time in a few moments at the end or anywhere during it, I know Dave was at the NAIAS, the North American International Auto Show, in his hometown of Detroit, and it's going on right now. And off record, we spoke a little bit about that. Lots going on there. So thank you so much for taking your valuable time to be with us, both my panel and my audience. And are you ready to go, Raj? I'll bag out and look for John.
We're ready. Yeah, sure.
All righty. Enjoy.
Okay, Carm. Thank you very much. So, yes, last week was the Consumer Electronics Show. My colleagues on this conversation will agree that it did not disappoint from the standpoint of a automotive-centric event. I think my colleagues would also agree that it overshadowed the subsequent Detroit show, which I also attended for a couple of days for the press days. Now, certainly the Detroit show stands out for the vehicle launches and announcements, but I think from a technology perspective, CES was head and shoulders above the Detroit show. But not all of the developments were obvious to all attendees. So I'm trying to focus a little bit on the connectivity. And the underlying takeaway for me at CES is car companies still really don't understand what they need to be doing with vehicle connections, what this opportunity represents. And I do want to take into account Carm's, your audience in particular. So I think the fear or the concern is that the connected car is going to keep the customer much closer to the dealer, and the aftermarket will never see that that vehicle again. And strangely, the car companies seem focused on shiny, sparkly things like apps and goofy stuff and are not really sticking to their knitting and the stuff that needs to be sorted out, like security, like software updating, like customer relationship management and service scheduling from the car. So that essentially really is not happening. So the aftermarket need not fear, I would have to say. But that's my interpretation of what's going on. Let me take a trip around the panelists here and get their thoughts. I'm going to start with Mabubul, and Dave will come around to you counterclockwise on my screen anyway, with impressions of the show and takeaways. We can take into account anything that happened in Detroit as well. So, Mabubal, what did you see? Have we moved the ball forward in terms of connectivity and the things the industry really should be doing, the automotive industry?
Yeah, no, thank you, Roger. Actually, the event was amazing. I'm impressed every year. It's a lot of showbiz than actual under the hood, as you said. And it's always showing the next cool thing and consumer experience. So there was a lot of focus around, you know, how technologically advanced they are in terms of auto parking, autonomous driving, those kind of things where they are V2V, V2X kind of things had the focus. So there were other areas that were really around, you know, the user experience, the driver experience. That was the focus really. And a lot of what I call gesture-based technology so that you have, you know, less distraction during driving. So it's very difficult to say what is really coming into the car versus what is being shown, because I think there is a probably in a larger corporation, there are two teams. One is to do a demo wear and to show people what's possible, and the one is what is really coming into the car and what time frame. But
I would agree with that. Big disconnect between what was being shown in hotel suites and maybe even on the floor versus what's actually in the cars.
Yeah. So I think overall, but it gives a glimpse of what is possible. I think CES is all about consumer at the end, even though you can call it car electronic show, but it's a consumer electronic show. And I think it's about the OEMs trying to be closer to the consumer and trying to show that they understand the consumer need, they understand the benefits. So it was really a lot around the cockpit of the car and what it means for you.
And before I go to John, you're not going to say anything about IoT or software updating?
I could. I just thought overall that was the higher level. Obviously, you know, if I don't say about software update, I probably will get some negative point. No, in everything that we do in advanced electronics, whether it is around ADAS systems or electronics, the need for a software update, not need for a software, the ability to do an update, because software always has some bugs, will always need a next version of release, just like we are used to any electronics that we have today, whether it's PC or mobile phone. That is a must have. So I think that strategy, it looks like it's a there's not a system level strategy on the software update. It's about component by component level strategy. So some tier ones are thinking, yes, we need that. So then we partner with them. But from the OEM perspective, I think that's happening under the hood. They don't want to come out and say it, but that's something they are working on and that we are working with them. And those solutions will manifest itself in mobile, in the hands of consumer in 2018. And before that, through other means, what we call retroactive OTA, which is using smartphone. And I love to talk about that later. Using your smartphone to download those software and then bring it in the car and then update the car via Bluetooth or NFC. So these are some of the here and now solution and then embedded solution that will come down the road.
I admire your restraint in not talking about Movimento.
Here's great news. There's a new brake pad on the market that can stop a pickup SUV or CUV up to 50 feet sooner than other leading pads. And on top of that, it lasts up to twice as long as previous designs. Sound too good to be true? Well, Wagner Brake did it. They designed their new Wagner OEX brake pads that stopped up to 50 feet sooner than other leading brake pads. To prove it, they got Link Engineering, pretty much the industry standard on brake performance testing, and they got their proof. But Wagner needed more convincing. They asked 400 top technicians to put Wagner OEX pads to the test, where it matters most, in their shops and on their customers' vehicles. 99% said they saw a noticeable difference in the new brakes, and 95% said they'd likely recommend them to other service professionals for their customers. Now, soon you can get Wagner OEX brake pads in your shop. They'll be available nationwide with coverage for 95% of U.S. pickups, SUVs, and CUVs. Get the full story. Learn about the science behind Wagner OEX and check coverage. go to WagnerBrake.com.
John, what was your takeaway at CES and thoughts on security and OTA?
First off, can you guys hear me okay? Yep. Work?
Yes.
I thought the show was great. It was 185,000 people. I mean, I don't like Vegas. I don't normally like the show, but this show was pretty good. 185,000 people showed up. Maybe it's important to note that it's to Mabubel's point, it was a consumer electronics show, but Gary Shapiro and his team are changing the show, right? They changed the organization to be the CTA, Consumer Technology Association. They're trying to get away from just the definition of electronics to all things technology. They're beginning to give some very good, strong focus on anything that's technical, anything that's technology, it's going to be at this show. And so that was pretty cool. That was pretty interesting. But I do reflect your points, Roger. There was a lot of stuff, but the stories were pretty fragmented across the board. There was a lot of conversation about software. There was a lot of conversation about security. The ITSA hosted a panel about where they're at in terms of intelligent transportation. So it's kind of interesting that it's becoming sort of the de facto almost, I'd say, transportation show. There was infrastructure people there. There were state DMVs there. There were the state DOTs there. There was a lot of folks there now coming to this show as a sort of de facto what's going on and what's going to come in terms of transportation, which I thought was pretty interesting. And then there was, of course, all the other standard stuff, right? Speakers, stuff that will kill, you know, more noise, and more pretty people. It was a very good show, and I enjoyed it.
Let me ask you this before I go to Dave, and that is firmware over-the-air updates. The issue that I hear quite a bit is how can the aftermarket and dealers participate? Is it against their interest, or is... You know, I hear that, like, new car dealers, they'd love to have a car sitting in the bay just getting software update and getting paid to do it. But it's not very fun for the customer. Do we really want to fight for the aftermarket to do all those software updates, or do we want to just encourage that to happen faster and let the aftermarket and the dealers handle more significant work?
That's a good question. I guess at the end of the day, software updating the vehicle is a reality. It's needed. I mean, we on the phone know the complexity of the things that are in the car. We're also, you've all heard me speak, right? Software is just a momentary representation of what our thinking is at a point in time. And as we learn more, or as we see how the world changes, you know, we obviously want to reflect that in the software. So software updating has to happen, and it should happen as fast as possible. The mechanism, whether it's over the air or updates at a bay or dealer updates, or I mean, I certainly have personal opinions. I don't know if they're worthwhile for this particular show right now. I mean, I don't know if there's, you know, fighting. We should all be fighting to make sure that A, consumers understand that their car is in fact a living entity and needs to be constantly curated. B, we need to be fighting for the fact that there are many ecosystems that support that car, whether it's a dealer, aftermarket, you know, the traditional aftermarket in terms of independent shops or the glammy, sexy aftermarket that mods the vehicle, or whether it's the dealer shops. That's what we should be doing. And I think, Roger, you've seen it, you've heard it. The OEMs haven't historically thought about that. They've built the car and shipped it. So part of our requirements is to be advocates for the fact that this is now a ship and remember world, and whatever the avenues are to continually remember it, those are the ones we need to be advocating for.
Dave, I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot. And I'm sorry for not giving you a heads up on this question I'm going to toss at you. But I don't know if you saw Mark Royce of GM's quote that we would never update the software and our safety systems over the air. We would never do that. We would never touch the software affecting braking and steering. I expressed my opinion on that in a blog. I firmly believe he'll be eating his words before the end of the year. But what do you think about that? I mean, I think those systems are the ones that have to be done over the air.
Well, I think the point that he was trying to make, and, you know, people use kind of that safety system item is kind of the catch-all, right, for the lower level sort of autonomous systems. You know, if you look at cell phones, for example, it's a layered approach, right? You know, the OS runs on top of a set of microsystems that actually, for example, manage your ability to make telephone calls, connect securely to the telephone network. Those things actually don't ever get upgraded. So I think there will be a level of true safety systems. Maybe the stuff that is kind of the limp home. You know, if you remember the way that that cars, actually most of them still work today, is if your monitors go on you, you go in limp home mode. You go in this mode where basically the car says, I'm going to stop looking at the monitors, but at least I can run so you can get somewhere. There'll be a limp home kind of OS that's underneath everything. That is the, I at least can stop something unbelievably awful from happening, right? Your whole car being made so that you can't steer or whatever. And I, for the foreseeable future, I think those updates would occur person to person. You'll have to go somewhere and plug into something for those updates to occur. But that's going to become less and less. And so you're going to get more and more of the OS that runs on top that does autonomous vehicle things and that. And you know what we haven't gotten to yet, and I know we will, because we see it in the aftermarket. You know, if you really think about it, I would argue the automotive industry in general, they were the first ones to figure out how to root software. I mean, you know, you used to be able to buy a device to reprogram, right, your car so that you could change shift points and things like that. Totally around the OEMs. The OEMs didn't like it.
Well, what are you saying? You can't do that now? Come on.
No. I'm saying you can do that, right? But that happened long before you could root cell phones. So the next step is going to be, it's going to be, do you want to root your Ford Sync system so that you can change the adaptive cruise so it'll slow down to 0 miles an hour, for example. And well, I think we're going to see more and more of that.
So it's interesting you took that tack, because I thought one of the biggest developments at the event was the sort of Smart Device Link Summit. This is Ford's App Link in open source, and they had most of the Asian car manufacturers there. Renault and PSA were there, actually, and GM. And presenting were Toyota, UIE, UI Evolution, QNX, and Liveo, and Ford, and talking about SDL, but most importantly, Amazon. So Amazon was there talking about using the smartphone to extract data from the car for vehicle-to-vehicle communications, for sharing alerts, you know, the usual, you know, black ice story or accident, communicating it to cars behind you. It was very unusual. It was the same presentation that this particular executive had given at the AWS reboot or whatever they called their event in the middle of last year, where there were a couple of automotive presentations. So the idea of the smartphone for extracting data from the car, do you have some thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, so, you know, in the end, there's going to be a lot of players that are going to want to play, right? So, you know, today we're seeing smartphone. We're certainly seeing partnerships between Apple and Android OSs, right? We're seeing the connection. You know, Amazon wants to bring basically the Amazon Echo to be able to control your vehicle, right? That's a different, at least, level of operating system connectivity. And I think we're going to see lots of things that are going to be able to connect. And they will, you know, it's a little Jurassic Park-y, right? You know, they will find a way. You can try to lock people out as much as you want to. People will find a method, third parties will find a method to allow you to do what they think are cool things to your vehicle. The question is, and nobody would really answer this, certainly, you know, so I watched CES from afar, but was at the auto show, and at least the government folks I talked to said, do you anticipate that you will treat cars differently than phones, that you would create legislation forcing them to have areas of the command and control that are not purposely not updatable? Like, you know, you would legislate air gaps or something, and nobody would answer. I think right now we're in this nascent period, which nobody wants to say we would legislate away any of this sort of thing.
So I saw the GM $500 million investment in Lyft, Dave, and my thought is, okay, A, why didn't you just buy the company like Daimler bought Ride Scout, number one? Two, short of that, what do you intend to do with Lyft? And the implications are pretty significant from the standpoint of making cars available, maybe even having a dealer, helping people, you know, get to or from a dealer if the car is being serviced. As one of the challenges that Lyft has is critical mass, so getting more, you know, cars out there, Lyft cars, drivers available. But yeah. Also, of course, you have an identity management activity, so I thought you might have a perspective there from the standpoint of ride sharing and different users of the car. And just a side note, by the way, that Mashable put up a story that was not accurate, saying that they were going to launch autonomous ride-sharing vehicles in Austin, like, immediately. And I got that cleared up, that was a big whoops, that was not happening. But, you know, what are your thoughts about GM investing in Lyft? Why does that make sense? And and you have a particular perspective, I think, on it.
Yeah, so two pieces of information. You know, at CES, they announced their investment in Lyft. At the auto show, when they showed the Bolt, Mary Barra demonstrated how it's a multi-user vehicle, so which is interesting. So that it actually has.
Now, how is the Bolt a multi-user vehicle?
So they're actually implementing the concept of, you know, I call it personas in the vehicle that says that you can have, you could share it. Now, the use case that is the most obvious use case is shared among the family. So that as each driver gets in, it changes. But that share could be, fits into the whole Lyft concept, right? That says it is now a shareable vehicle that could be parked down on the corner. Right. You know, Lyft is looking not just at the idea of competing directly with the Uber.
You can say it's Uber
from a standpoint of drivers. Right. So drivered vehicles, but also kind of shared vehicles. Right. I need a vehicle. Oh, well, there's one at the end of the street and it's in parking space A, B, C, D, and walk on over and unlock the car and go there.
So you're a Detroiter. Can you explain to me why we're waiting so long for OnStar's version of Uber? I mean, I would trust an OnStar driver to be my Uber driver. And if I were an OnStar subscriber, I'd want that opportunity, you know, facilitated and enabled by the service.
Yeah. So I think that the OEMs, you know, and I hate to say it was Covisint that taught them this lesson, but I think they learned a small lesson, which is they're not very good at running technology companies that are standalone technology companies. And I think their model is this model that says, look, if it goes in a car, then yes, we may buy the technology, we may partner, but we may decide to build. If it is about services related to the car, we're going to invest in someone who knows what they're doing, because it's just not our core competency to be able to run that sort of stuff, right? And trust me, I worked for a company for 4 years run by OEMs, and their focus is a little different than the focus of folks in Silicon Valley.
Well, it certainly opens the doors to some interesting possibilities. And Dan Amen has been quoted validating the fact that he's actually considering some of those possibilities. And I think some of those opportunities might involve dealers.
I believe you would agree that being a top tech is real hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers. There, you can get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. When online is your perfect way to learn, do it with Guru's 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of training course options. And with the Guru's on-the-go technology fleet, they bring the latest products and demos right to your shop. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards Loyalty Program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Mortar Parts' brands. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Gurus training, support, and get in on the rewards.
Okay, so all this vehicle connectivity, you know, we're hearing about the insurance industry is going to disappear and people are going to stop buying cars. I'm a little skeptical. And so I'm a little curious, Mabubal, what do you see happening from the standpoint and what progress did you see happening at CES with regard to autonomous vehicles and, you know, and safer vehicles, if you will, that are going to avoid hitting each other? Did you see anything in that regard?
Yeah, I think there was a lot on the safety side about avoiding collisions and auto parking. So these are what, you know, super cruise control, or you can say autopilot, termed by Tesla. So you will see, seeing some of those advancements, I think those are the near-term advancement that you will see, that you get out of the car and you press a button and then the car finds a parking spot and parks over there. So it helps you, as you might know, that in an urban city such as, you know, San Francisco or New York or Amsterdam, 20% of the time is spent on finding a parking space. 20% of the drive time is spent on finding a parking space. So what you are seeing, some of the technology is that how do, you know, you just get out of your car and you press the auto parking. It's not only parking next to it. It finds a parking and parks over there. That saves a ton of time for a lot of people. And it improves the productivity. So a lot was on that side. But in terms of truly full autonomous, I didn't see much as such. But it is an incremental autonomous level, are increasing from level, you know, going from level 2 to level 3, and then down the road will be level 4 and 5. There are 5 levels of autonomous or autonomy in a vehicle. And the level 5 would be the driverless, fully driverless, where liabilities and everything will move to the car, and the driver doesn't have to have a driving license. And that would be the day when my daughter could go from home to school without me driving it, right? And she, by the way, she doesn't have a driving license. So that's going to take, I think she's going to be more, you know, she's not going to be 16. She'll be much older by that time when that will happen.
So, John, OBD2, you can't tell me you don't have some thoughts on OBD2. Is that thing going to go away? What's going on?
So I have lots of thoughts on it. So to answer your first question, software updating today in the vehicle is done over the OBD, right? We bring our car into a shop. The shop guys know how to do it. They stick in the equipment. They put the car in the test mode, and bada bing, bada boom, software shows up. So the efficacy of software updating over OBD is proven. In fact, it's the mechanism by which the OEMs actually endorse it. I think your broader question is in a non-OEM guided manner, is there a way to do software updating over the OBD? Can aftermarket guys come up, as today was pointing out, you know, or even you were pointing out, can you buy equipment and retune? Can you do things to the car? The answer is yes. You can do them today. Most of the things you can do today are reconfiguration, not reprogramming. So where the OEM says you can only push so much torque out of a vehicle, that's a software value, and we can push more to the car. So those things are happening today. And when you do them, they're obviously at your owner's discretion. The real two question that you're asking is, can I do something like what was done in the mobile device space, which is, can I take a phone from Apple that was originally from Apple, or say from Google, and put different software on it to do the things that I want to use that hardware for? Can I actually write software to make that thing do something different? That doesn't yet exist in the vehicles that you buy commercially off the shelf. There's people working hard to do that, but that's a whole new world. And is it viable? Sure. It's all the parts are there. All the pieces are there. How real is it? It's not going to happen where you're going to do it, Roger. Right? You're not going to go into your house, get a software download, stick your phone in through Bluetooth using Movimento's, you know, OBD dongle, and then reflash. You're not going to reflash your control, your engine control. You might reprogram it, but you're not going to reflash your engine control. That world that we see is unlikely today. People are working on it, but it's unlikely today.
And I'm assuming you would agree that OBD is not going away.
So I no, I'm not that strong. So the issue with Volkswagen has pointed out to folks in government that vehicles can in fact behave and be programmed to behave differently when things are on the OBD. So I think there is a conversation to be had, and I think OEMs are having it right now, about how do you shut off the OBD. One of the panels that I moderated, I had Visteon and Harman on there, and they were talking about the fact that we can do all this great stuff to secure the vehicle, but if we still have the OBD, it's not secure. So there's a natural evolution of the conversation to say, do we remove the OBD? Which then begets the question of why was it there the first time, which is the EPA. So now you have to figure out how you handle that. So I don't know if it's going away, but it may go away. Certainly the conversations are happening for them to go away. But if it goes away, you're looking at 2018, 19, 20, and moving onward. So there's going to be a lot of cars in the car park with OBD for a very, very long time.
I did not see a lot of OBD products at the show. I think it does raise some questions as to the level of enthusiasm for those aftermarket devices. I think there's definitely an opportunity there, but I think you raise some questions as to what the car makers are struggling with right now, which is with all of these devices in the market, you know, the Zubies and the Mojios of the world and the automatics. So Dave, do you have some thoughts on OBD? What I'm saying is there were not a lot of devices at the show. Voyo Motive was there. I think Vinley was there, but that was about it.
Yeah. So I don't know enough, right? And John's much more the expert on this as to whether ODB will be ODB. but there will always be a methodology to plug
whether OBD
into,
will be DOA.
Yeah. Well, there'll always be a way to plug in to be able to get to things from a completely non right. So it's again, you know, if you know my PC, if my PC had no method to connect to it at all, then there would be no way to. If my hard drive goes, there's things that can break on PCs that would brick it. And there'd be no way to fix it. So there'll be some sort of connector somewhere. I think the bigger question is, will it be one of those, yeah, it's hidden deep within some module and it's only accessible by your dealership, and it won't be this open, easily plug-inable thing.
So Roger, when we say get rid of the OBD, we very, very specifically, I think, you were saying, but certainly when I was answering it, I meant the actual 31-pin space underneath the steering wheel.
That's what I'm talking about.
Exactly. So some of the conversation, though, to Dave's point, there will always need to be a, we'll call it jack-in point. But if you move away from OBD, which is a passive electrical signaling kind of interface, to something that is more attuned to, say, today's computer world. So you could get what they call smart USB connector areas where you need to know the MAC address. You need to have validated sort of hardware connector points, right? There's intelligence in the actual connection. So it's not it's still insecure, but it's not completely open. That's the point. So to Dave's point, getting rid of OBD doesn't mean you get rid of all connection points to the car. It just means you change the manner in which you're going to connect and you bring security and efficacy and you bring some level of ownership to that connection that's controlled, at least by design, by the OEM. Which goes back to the comment that I think you and I were talking about on the first show, which is the OEMs don't know about this aftermarket or the mechanic. They build cars that then go out on the road. And so we have a job to help advocate on behalf of all these different groups for the sort of unintended consequence that can happen when you go down a certain path with using technology. So I think that's what we were trying to get across last time. Not that the aftermarket is completely going away, just that there's an advocacy requirement that needs to happen.
So the port's not going away. That's certainly my impression. But everybody is keenly interested in security. So you've got a bunch of these companies in Israel, strangely enough, Arelu, TowerSec, which was bought by Harman, Argus, and then a new one, Karumba. And if you look at Arelu, TowerSec, and Argus, they're focusing on monitoring the network in the car for intrusion. Karumba is focusing on securing the ECUs individually. And then there's a variety of other layers of security. Certainly Freescale is building security in at the semiconductor layer. And Mabubul, you'd have to tell me what Erdetto, your partner, is doing. So, Dave, security is your remit. Is all this focus on security, will this ever have any impact on the aftermarket? And will we ever be able to make cars secure? Those are my two questions.
First off, I would say everyone's talking about security, because if you talk about it, you can people can assume it's important. And the security that goes in that A, costs the OEMs no money, meaning I don't have to put bigger processors in it, and B, do not interfere with how easy it is for owners to do stuff. That's the stuff that'll be put in. But I think this is going to be like everything else, right? If you owners don't want to have to do anything related to this. In the end, no, we're never going to have a completely and totally secure anything, right? So our phones are not going to be completely secure. Our PCs are not going to be. As they get better, the hacks will get more sophisticated. Matter of fact, I think in automotive, there's this reverse thing, which is interesting, right? Which is, so, you know, I've got a 1979 Corvette in my garage. It's the most secure vehicle I have. I can guarantee you no one's hacking that car. So older actually is more secure from that standpoint, which is a little bit different. So no, as we get more and more in, and you know, the scary part is,
Why are you saying it's more secure? Are you just saying no one can wirelessly get into that car?
Yeah. There's
okay,
no,
okay. Right?
No one's gonna hack into, if you want to kill my brakes in that car, you got to cut the brake lines. So there's no way to go around anything else. I think we're where PCs were in the 80s when it comes to cars. Not that there is bad, but from a security standpoint, it's all about building really cool interfaces and usability, and security will come later. Or where phones were about 10 years ago, where now all of a sudden we're finding out we made decisions that weren't.
Well, it's funny because, you know, car companies say, oh, you know, Volkswagen in particular was claiming, and Audi, that they were put a lot of effort into protecting that access point at the OBD, that their firewall or their software firewall or whatever it was very hard to penetrate. And yeah, but, there are at least a half a dozen companies out there that were like, yeah, whatever, yeah, you know, no problem.
But the Volkswagen one, so Volkswagen's a very interesting, first off, I don't think they can talk anymore about this. But the reason is, and so everybody thinks that where vulnerabilities come from is these bad guys in China and in Russia who are hacking in, right? Oftentimes they come from the OEM, right? It's the guy in the OEM who introduces some bad thing to do something. Well, Volkswagen's a perfect example of we're really secure, although we have no idea what was going on with these guys who changed the code so that.
So you're saying Volkswagen hacked themselves?
Yeah. Well, and that's where vulnerabilities come from. It's the developer that either inadvertently or purposely put something in there that can be exploited externally.
So Mabubul, how do we make cars more secure without interfering with the shop down the road's ability to service the car? And interfere with the ability of the customer to enhance the car if they so choose.
So Dave touched upon some of the very key points, and I think, I don't know whether people caught it, is security is an afterthought. So what you have is a patch-up security. Okay, let me secure OBD2. So you are always doing patch-up, and there's new holes and new cracks, and you're patching up. We have gone through this in the networking industry and telecom industry as well. I'm not saying it's 100% secure. Both Dave and John said that nothing is 100% secure, but having a security practice at every component level, at a system level security architecture, but every component must have a security requirement that fits into the bigger system architect. Unless we go through that methodology, we had that in the networking industry where security was a software layer, but then we had to go back about 7-10 years back, and we have to say everything that we do, there's a mandatory product requirement document on security. you must have this in your document. So that was a gate for everything that we did, and it had to fit into the overall system architecture. Unless you do that, you are really it's a patch up. It's like you're trying to fix while driving. Fix your tire while driving. So you need a system architecture to understand that how security has to be fixed, and that is a multi-layer approach. You talked about it. There is a hardware security, trusted root security, or HSM security. You have to get onto a OS level security. You have to get on a virtualization security. You have connectivity security within that network. Within vehicle network, you have to have also the vehicle network security that you talk about. A lot of the Israeli companies over there, anomaly detection and all those kind of things. But then extra vehicle proximity security, you have to think about those. The reason why you have to think in that way is because you have to see car as a system. I talked about it last time. It's a hamburger. It's slices of things that it's put together, and suddenly it's great to eat and it's great integration, but it's actually a layered solution. So if you think about it as a system, then you can have a systematic approach to the overall security, because then whether it is the tire sensor, which is also connected to CAN bus, and you wanted to make it very cheap.
So let me cut to the chase. We can have security then, and yet still allow for modification and enhancement of the vehicle.
Absolutely, I think the parts have to have some what we call small chips. That we have seen in Apple's and other, where they have Apple certified component have a small chip in there so that it detects it's authorized parts and not authorized parts. So you will see more into that side also for the aftermarket, where you want to avoid the counterfeit products. You want to make sure it's a genuine products, and I think a lot of those practices has to come into. So the aftermarket will change from just plug in anything to more of the authorized certified products, because you are now going into advanced electronics, ADAS system, and all those kind of things, and you cannot have just anything just plugged in and then have your vehicle hacked or have some crazy situation that you don't want to that you have no control of.
I like that. That's kind of an IoT vision as well, one where the not only are you interacting with other devices and systems, but the modules within your system are interacting with each other and handshaking. So, John, do you have any thoughts on this subject before I go to the concluding topic? And I know Carm's going to make me ask all the pending questions.
The awareness and sensitivity to the audience, and maybe the comments that I made last week about the potential demise of the aftermarket. Right? I mean, Google made just kind of like, let's use HSM certified parts. Let's use those in other markets have been shown to be construed as OEM words to control. We have to be very, very careful about what ultimately happens here, because again, at the end of the day, people want a certain behavior and a certain right to modify, work with, manage their vehicle in a way that they see fit. And I think the automotive industry is just yet another industry that's going to have to go through this crashing throw of what does it mean to have a digital device and what can you do with it. And again, I point out to people, go look at stories from printers. You can't get ink from anywhere around the world. There's certain ink issues. Keurig just announced it with their coffee pots. You can only get coffee from certain parts. It's, again, there are well-intentioned meanings, and to Dave Miller's part, right? They're well-intentioned. They start from a very good intention, but they have some significant unintended consequences. And it was those unintended consequences that I was trying to highlight here. If we're not careful, we go down paths that potentially end in a future where the aftermarket is severely cramped and changed, not in a good way. That's what I was getting at. So again, it's an awareness issue.
I'm curious what your thoughts are, John, with regard to aftermarket safety. So the ability to convert a car with a kit to an autonomous driving car, or mm-hmm. adding other kinds of collision avoidance features to a car. Any thoughts in that regard?
Yeah, it's a huge deal. I mean, A, it's a huge deal. B, it's very, very proved. It's been proven to work. And C, even NHTSA argued in their advance notice for proposed rulemaking for FMVSS 150, the V2V or V2I stereo, but the only way to get the true value of safety as immediately as possible is to leverage the aftermarket. Because again, we only do about 15 or 16, maybe 17, it depends, that number of ebbs and flows, 16 million vehicles a year in the US, but there's 255 million vehicles in the car park. So it's a long time before all the cars have these active safety systems. So the aftermarket is a huge, huge component piece to bring that. And there's more that can be done, right? There's more that can be taught to educate people about the value of automatic braking, forward crash avoidance, blind spot monitoring, et cetera. So yes, the aftermarket plays a huge part in that.
Dave, do you have any thoughts on aftermarket safety integration, enabling an existing car for autonomous driving?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a divergent vehicle directions, right? So I think we're going to see some manufacturers do it the Apple way, right? And if you think about it, Apple believes that their units work very well and are very secure because they're soup to nuts. They do the OS, they do the operating system, they decide what apps go in. There is no, you can't add third-party hardware stuff to an Apple phone, or even in many cases, an Apple PC, right? And I think we will find companies, I think Tesla would be an example of that, that are going to do everything. And then we're going to have the Android Google guys who are going to be much more open. You can add stuff, you can add capabilities, you can plug stuff in to it, and that has advantages for the consumer.
But I mean to cars today that are on the road, converting them to autonomy.
Some things I think you're going to be able to do easily. Some are just going to be hard. It's let's look at adaptive cruise control just as a really simple example. There were aftermarket cruise control modules. I remember in the day, if you didn't have cruise, you could add a cruise control module, and it took a little bit of work, but you could do it. I don't see any reason why you couldn't add something and slap two sensors on the front of your car that work with your cruise control module.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Roger,
go ahead.
A perfect example of that is Cruise Automation, right? It's a startup out of San Francisco. Kyle Busch,
yes. CEO. That's what I was thinking of course.
Yes, and he modified an Audi A7, like 2012 or 13, and he's got a stated goal for under $10,000. You will buy a fully finished kit that is professionally installed. Somebody like a Brand Motion or others, right? Somebody in the aftermarket would install it, and you'll have autonomy. And he shows it. He's got a video of him driving up and down the 101. He's got a license from the DMV to allow for autonomous drive, and he takes his hands off the wheel. He brings up a book. And this car had never intended to be autonomous. I mean, look at Tesla. They never intended to be autonomous. And with a software update, it became autonomous. Yeah. So the efficacy has been proven. Now it's just a matter of getting people to understand it and start asking for it, and then getting the distribution channels to have it.
Well, we have very little time left, so I'm going to try to do the questions, some of which have already sort of slid off the screen here. So I'll say, first of all, do any of you know the expression blockchain? So I'm seeing, has blockchain-based technology been discussed in regards to financing and authentication?
Yeah, so blockchain is a technology for secure. It's a time and space issue. There's a group out of Estonia. It's very well understood. It's the fundamental underlying pin for Bitcoin. IBM's talked about it. A number of companies have talked about going into it. You can use it for efficacy, ownership, and provenance. I guess the question here, have we ever used blockchain for the purposes of underscoring sort of provenance of software? No.
Well, right in now, regards to financing and authentication, it says.
So I can tell you there are a couple of working groups that are looking at blockchain actually is for vehicle authentication, right? So it's the ability for a vehicle to have an immutable identity that lives through the duration of its life, that then gets associated to appropriate owners and such. And again, if I'm going to go through this ride sharing thing, so this is where it's interesting for some stuff. It's very interesting in finance, because the way it works is if I walk up to car ABC that's sitting on the road and my phone unlocks it, and then I drive it for 200 miles somewhere, I have to get billed that was me and it was the right car. And that becomes a big deal. You know, I want to make sure I'm billed appropriately and that. So it's an interesting geeky technology.
And it is gaining a lot of traction in financial even the banks and others are looking at it. It's very new technology. A lot of trust is built in there. A lot of transparency is in there. So I have not seen it in the car, but Dave is there. But I think it's something to worth looking at.
Yep. So new ownership models. I don't know if there are any other questions. Carm?
There was one on modularization.
Yeah, can you see it? I can't see it anymore.
It already passed. It just said, is modularization something being studied, and will it help software updating? Something like that.
Okay. And
Roger, we lost you.
We lost Roger.
Oh, boy.
Oh, but he's coming back.
Oh, here he comes.
What a save. So modularization, obviously, Faraday was showing modularization as if it was something new. I don't think modularization is anything new. Implications? Significant?
Well, I mean, I think Faraday was, they were showing, there was modularization of the product, right? So like, for example, when Google introduced what they called the alpha phone, right, where you had all the different parts and you could build a phone for yourself. And then I think there's modularization in terms of if you build a car modularly, but from a software mental thought process. So Mabubo and I have talked about this, right? I mean, what's one of the value props of Tesla is they're a software company that builds hardware. So they recognize why it's painful to have lots of different hardware types. So you should have the same hardware type and use software differently. So depending on where the author or the question owner was going, yes, there are many companies studying modularization, whether it's modularization at the hardware level or modularization of software with a perspective to trying to minimize hardware costs. Absolutely an active study. A lot more to be done, but probably the thought leader, at least now, would be a Tesla, somebody Faraday, somebody who's a software company that's now putting hardware up.
Any other thoughts?
Well, in addition, what you're beginning to see is some of the tier ones are thinking how they can update their own component. So you have now, instead of looking at it as a system from the OEM perspective, you are having tier one, I can update my module. So you have also that approach that is also coming into play. So I don't know whether that is also meant by modularization. But I think what is required is a systematic approach to be able to update different things. Otherwise, what you're going to have is really silos of updates, because tier one supplier vendor A can do his or her parts, others cannot do. So you have different, lot of diversity. So I think what we need is equal. You have to raise the bar. I'm on the software update. I don't. This security and software update should be universal across all. It should not be left up to the tier one that I have more security and I have software update. You don't have at the car level. It's a combination of all the suppliers. And it's not good enough for me to know that a module can update, the others cannot. Because it operates as a system, and as the car software complexity is increasing, it is more and more becoming from distributed to more centralized system, more as a system, one system, and especially in autonomous car, every aspect it should be interconnected, and so it is very important to take that approach rather than component level update by individual vendors.
Well, what I'm hearing is the industry has a long way to go, especially given the fact that we're working with a CAN bus as the network that we're working on, which is, I think we'd all agree, ill-suited to what we're asking of it today. And it's going to take years to get to the Ethernet that we really need. But gentlemen, we're over our hour. I know at least one of you needed to go at sharp at the top of the hour. So unless anyone else has a further comment, I just want to thank you and hand it over to Carm. Again, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
It was a completely different episode, and it's really it went to a completely other level. And again, I learned a ton. A couple things I have to say. Thanks for the great chatter from my audience. You guys are on fire. Thank you so much. A lot of great questions and a lot of passionate people listening. I appreciate the steerage to the aftermarket. And I think there was a lot of stuff going on with the last episode, but you really cleared it up. And I think it also shows us there's an awful lot of opportunity out there. The evolution has started. A couple of my great takeaways. Lots of things to connect. And I love, Dave, you said the old Jurassic Park thing. And I say this a lot. Nature will find a way. And it is so true because of that damn thing called competitive capitalism out there that will keep many people in business as they try to say, no, this is the right way. No, this is the right way. So there's lots to do to overcome the next phases of technology. And someone said the comfort for the consumer. Oh, it was Frank. Frank Butkus-Lloyd's on the right side. It was a great quote, Frank. Thanks. I love what Mabubul said about smartphone connectivity, Wi-Fi cell, OTA, today's cell, Bluetooth. I know your company is. It was a great video to show the things that you guys are working on. I love John OBD2, the fates to be determined. And Dave, you said a lot about that. And then Frank mentioned one of the most important things. I think that it is critical for the aftermarket. What about technician licensing? In the being network specialists, it's probably time that this dialogue ramped itself up so that we, when we're ready to be dealing with the things that are so necessary, like that USB port and being able to really get inside the car if the OBD2 goes away, with 255 million cars out there, I'm sorry, guys, there's an awful lot of work that will still need to be. And even if it's 50 years from now, we're going to need quality, licensed people to keep the world's transportation going. And then I loved it. Now, here's the biggest takeaway for the aftermarket. The biggest is this authorized parts with a built-in chip. Oh, my God. I think it was Mobile. That was you, right?
Yep.
Whoa. Whoa. I mean, I can't even start to say. I'd have to have an hour to think about exactly what that means to my heart. So thank you all so much for being here to my audience. Roger, for being such an excellent moderator again. Dave Miller, Mabubul Alam, and John Ellis. Appreciate it again, guys. I have to tell you, we're going to have to do this again. So
happy
appreciate
to.
It. Thank you so much. Bye now.
Right. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.